So I want you to imagine just for a second that you're opening up this old, dusty shoebox.
Oh, yeah, everybody has one of those tucked away somewhere.
Right, exactly. It's probably buried in the back of a closet, and it is just full of these old, brittle, yellowing family photographs.
The ones that smell like, old paper and dust.
Yeah, that distinct heavy smell. And as you thumb through them, you realize something kind of heartbreaking. Like the images themselves are literally fading away.
Yeah, the contrast goes totally flat.
Exactly. The edges are crumbling. You are essentially holding a memory that is physically dying right there in your hands.
It's a really universally evocative image, honestly, because when you hold an object like that, there's this immediate, almost instinctual feeling that something irreplaceable is slipping away.
Like slipping into nothingness, yeah.
Right, and you just feel like you have to do something to stop it.
And that feeling is actually the perfect launching pad for our deep dive today, because we have this really fascinating stack of sources in front of us. Artist interviews, technical software breakdowns, some contemporary art critiques, and they all center around this specific digital artwork.
Created in March 2023, right?
Right, by the artist Jaro Duque. The piece is called Ruby. And our mission today is to explore this really profound collision. We're going to look at what happens when the cold empirical science of restoration collides head-on with the warmth of, creative, deeply personal interpretation.
To truly appreciate the scale of that collision, though, we kind of first have to establish a baseline for what that cold science of restoration actually looks like.
Okay, set the scene for us.
So think about how historical preservation is handled in like a purely academic or institutional setting. If an archivist is tasked with restoring a 12th century manuscript, their methodology is incredibly rigid,
Super strict.
completely objective. They operate in a sterile lab. They pass UV lights over the parchment to reveal faded ink. They apply these highly precise chemical solvents to lift centuries of grime without dissolving the
Oh,
fibers.
wow. Yeah. And literally handling the pages with tiny tweezers, I imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is a forensic investigation where the only acceptable outcome is this binary objective rescue of literal data.
Right.
You either successfully reveal the exact ink the author put on the page centuries ago, or you fail. There is absolutely no room for poetry.
Right, you don't get to rewrite a faded sentence just because you think your version sounds better.
Exactly. The hunt is strictly for cold, hard facts.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is where the Ruby Project completely flips the script on that traditional archival mindset. The starting point for this digital painting wasn't some piece of historical literature. It was one of those fading, crumbling artifacts from a personal shoebox. It was this nearly destroyed, almost completely lost, black and white photograph of the artist's wife, taken when she was just 16 years old. And when you take the intense dedication of that 12th century manuscript restorer, but you replace their chemical solvents and tweezers with modern digital software tools, and then apply them to a fading piece of intimate family history, the mission fundamentally changes.
The line between objective restoration and subjective creation just instantly blurs.
It practically evaporates.
Yeah, and the environment where this transformation takes place is super crucial to understanding why. Like, Jaro Duque isn't working in a sterile, anonymous laboratory.
Right, no UV lights and lab coats.
Exactly. He works out of his studio in Whittier, California, which is his daily creative headquarters. This specific project wasn't born out of an academic grant or a museum commission trying to preserve a public artifact.
It was deeply personal.
Right. It was born out of a desire to honor a 40-year personal relationship.
But I do want to heavily lean into the technical brilliance of what he actually accomplished in that Whittier studio, though. Because translating a heavily damaged black and white photo into a fully realized color painting is a brutal, exhausting exercise in digital forensics.
It's intense.
Yeah, people often assume colorizing an old photo just means grabbing like a digital paint bucket tool, slapping some peach-colored paint over a face, and calling it a day.
Oh, far from it. It's not just a simple point-and-click filter.
Exactly. The reality is incredibly mathematical because over time, black and white photos flatten out, they lose their physical contrast. But more critically, a black and white image inherently lacks the visual data of hemoglobin.
The blood.
Right, the visual evidence of blood flowing under human skin. When light hits your face in the real world, it doesn't just bounce off a flat surface.
It penetrates the skin.
Exactly, it penetrates the translucent outer layers, hits the blood vessels underneath, and scatters back out with this warm reddish glow.
Subsurface scattering.
Subsurface scattering, exactly. So when the artist is tasked with restoring those warm skin tones or the moderate red of her lips, or figuring out how a soft lateral light hits her cheek, he isn't just making a poetic choice to make her look pretty.
It's a structural requirement.
It's a mathematical necessity. He has to deduce those micro shifts in color and shadow to reconstruct a three-dimensional bone structure on a two-dimensional screen. Because if he ignores the hemoglobin, her face will literally look like a hardened concrete mask.
The color anchors the anatomy. It doesn't just decorate it.
Right. So I look at the artist in this scenario as a kind of digital archaeologist. But instead of excavating dirt with a trowel, he is excavating data.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, like he's looking at a massive gap in the physical photograph, the place where the paper has literally rotted away due to moisture.
Oh.
And he has to deduce exactly where a cheekbone ends based solely on the light refraction of a few surviving pixels on the jagged edge of that tear.
Right, using cloning tools and low opacity brushes.
Exactly. Painstakingly unearthing a face from the ruins of that paper.
What's fascinating here is I actually have to challenge that specific analogy.
Wait, really? You don't think the data fixation fits?
Calling him a digital archaeologist kind of gives the impression of strict empirical recovery. And that's not what is happening here. A scientific archaeologist, like someone digging up ancient pottery, doesn't alter a shattered vase to make it look more nostalgic.
Okay, fair point.
Right. They don't fill in the missing shards of clay with something prettier or more atmospheric just to evoke a feeling. They want the cold truth, broken or not.
Right.
But the decisions made in Ruby are undeniably poetic. They deliberately override the empirical data. Take the background of the painting, for example.
He stripped all of that historical context away entirely.
Exactly. If this were true archaeological restoration, he would have meticulously reconstructed the original room or the park or whatever literal environment was behind her. Instead, he isolated her against this neutral background built entirely out of bluish glazes.
Which requires super deep technical knowledge to pull off.
Oh, completely. In digital painting software, you achieve this by superimposing layers using blend modes, like multiply or overlay.
Which essentially multiplies the color values, right?
Yeah. Yes. A blend mode, like multiply mathematically, takes the color values of your base layer and multiplies them by the top layer. So the result is this darker, richer color. It's very much like looking through overlapping sheets of stained glass.
And pulling that off without ruining the image is hard. Because if you mess up the complementary colors, like if you're layering warm peach skin tones over cool blue glazes, you don't get stained glass.
No, you get digital mud.
Digital mud. The colors cancel each other out and the image just looks dull, flat, and dirty.
Yeah, the technical skill required to avoid that is undeniable, but we have to look at the underlying purpose of that skill.
Which is?
Well, the purpose of those blue glazes isn't to provide accurate historical context about where the photo was taken. The purpose is to create a translucent atmosphere of suspended time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The cool blue background isolates the warmth of the subject's face and creates this distinct mood of introspection. That is pure emotional language deliberately overriding cold data. He is using the software to paint a feeling, not to reconstruct a crime scene.
But the way he paints that feeling mimics the physical world in such a demanding way, though.
How so?
Well, think about how traditional oil painters work. They mix physical paint on a wooden palette. If they blend the wrong pigments, that paint becomes irrevocably muddy and the canvas is basically ruined.
Right.
Digital software removes that physical risk, sure, but it replaces it with a completely different kind of structural complexity. Digital layers.
Ah, yeah. Building from the inside out.
Exactly. Duke uses those digital layers exactly like traditional brushwork, but with, like, surgical precision. So on a base layer, he maps out the solid foundational bone structure, the hard anatomy of the skull, the tension of the jawline.
And then builds on top of it.
Right. He creates dozens of new transparent layers on top. He sets his Apple Pencil tool to something incredibly faint, like 10 or 15% opacity.
Barely visible.
Barely visible. And he uses those faint strokes to literally construct the skin, pore by pore, slowly building up the fleshy tissue over the digital bone. Like, if you've ever tried using a drawing app on an iPad and struggled to draw a simple circle.
Oh, I have. It's a mess.
Right. Now imagine using it to basically 3D print living human tissue onto a screen.
That meticulous construction of anatomy is so intense. And that focus is really highlighted by the framing of the piece, too.
Yeah, it's very close up.
It's an almost invasive framing. By deliberately eliminating all that background noise we just talked about, he imposes the subject's face as the absolute, undeniable, expressive core of the artwork. You literally cannot look anywhere else.
You're just pulled right into her eyes.
Exactly. You are forced into this intimate confrontation with the subject's gaze. And the gaze in Ruby is where the subjective interpretation fully takes over the driver's seat.
How does he describe it?
In his notes, he describes her hair as dark, fluid, and ethereal.
Ethereal, not clinical.
Right. Ethereal, not concrete, not forensic. The gaze he has constructed projects introspection and expectation. It captures a youth suspended right on the razor's edge between innocence and deep character.
Wow.
This is clearly not a clinical restoration of how she objectively looked on a random Tuesday when she was 16. This is the romantic projection of a mature man looking back across four decades at the girl who would become his wife.
He's actively constructing a personal myth.
Yes. And every single pixel is shaped by deep, enduring affection.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Projecting that deeply psychological romantic myth actually demands absolute, unforgiving technical perfection.
So you view the emotion as a byproduct of the technical execution?
Yeah, kind of. Because the human brain is incredibly sensitive to faces. We have these specialized neural pathways entirely dedicated to reading microscopic facial cues.
That's true.
So if the artist wants to project complex emotions like introspection and expectation, he has to get the math of the face flawlessly right.
Like the lighting.
Right. Take specular highlights, that tiny, sharp, white reflection of a light source that sits on the wet cornea of your eye.
Okay, yeah.
If the artist miscalculates the placement of that tiny white dot by literally 1 millimeter, or if the digital tension he paints into the tiny muscles of the lower eyelid is slightly misjudged, the entire emotional myth collapses.
The face slips directly into the uncanny valley.
The dreaded uncanny valley, where a digital face looks almost human, but something is microscopically wrong, so your brain just rejects it.
It ends up looking like a soulless mannequin instead of a loved one.
Exactly. You cannot project a profound emotional tribute through grotesque caricature. Therefore, the warmth of his affection and the success of his romantic myth is entirely 100% dependent on the cold mathematical precision of his Apple pencil strokes.
It is a beautiful paradox, honestly. The profound emotion completely relies on the rigid math. But let's look at how the artist himself views that math. When Jared Duque critically evaluated Ruby after he finished, he was very open about his technical choices. He explicitly admitted that, given the power of modern software, he could have pushed the piece much, much further.
Like more hyper-realistic.
Yes.
Yeah.
He could have made the background color transitions far more complex. He could have enriched the microtexture of the skin, adding every microscopic flaw, every pore, every subtle shine.
Because the software makes that entirely possible. Yeah. I mean, you can zoom in 500% and spend 3 weeks just painting individual eyelashes if you want to.
Right. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to ask why he stopped.
Why put the stylus down?
Exactly. When the software allows for infinite detail, why stop? It wasn't a lack of skill or patience. He deliberately put down his digital plastic surgeon's scalpel because he realized he had successfully captured the essence of Ruby at 16.
He found the feeling.
Right. He actively chose to subordinate technical perfection to the emotional atmosphere. His personal love for the subject dictated the final visual narrative, essentially telling him, you know, this is enough. Adding more data will only dilute the feeling.
And knowing exactly when to say this is enough is actually a master-level technical skill in its own right.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, prudency, like knowing when to stop, is arguably the hardest technical concept for any digital artist to master. Because the software gives you infinite do-overs, infinite layers, infinite zoom.
It's so easy to just keep adding.
Beginners fall into this trap constantly. They add more pores, more specular highlights, sharper reflections. And what happens is that the subsurface scatter we talked about earlier gets completely overwhelmed by surface detail.
The face loses its breath.
Yes.
Yeah.
It ends up looking like it's made of shiny plastic or wax. I mean, you've probably seen this when people overfilter their selfies on social media.
Fine.
The humanity gets smoothed or sharpened right out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
So stopping just before you cross that line into unnecessary, sterile hyperrealism proves he knows how to keep the illusion of life intact through this calculated, deliberate, pictorial looseness.
The restraint itself is a crucial part of his technique.
Yeah.
But let's move beyond the digital canvas for a moment and look at the ultimate consequence of all this technique, which brings us to the concept of permanence and this battle against time.
Okay, yeah.
We started this conversation by looking at that fragile, crumbling analog photograph in the shoebox, a piece of paper that is actively being erased by, you know, ambient humidity in the closet, microscopic mold, the UV light in the room.
It's a highly perishable object. And this is exactly where the digital medium steps in as the ultimate savior.
How so?
By taking that dying piece of paper and subjecting it to this exhaustive, meticulous process of high-resolution scanning and repainting, Duke is transforming a perishable physical object into an unalterable digital file.
Okay, I see your point.
It's the ultimate victory of technique. The software acts as this incorruptible vault for the memory. Let's be brutally honest. Without the intervention of that digital technology, without the Procreate layers and the pixel excavation, that photograph literally turns to dust in a few more decades. The image is gone forever.
Well, this raises an important question, though.
Okay.
Are we really comfortable reducing the concept of art and the preservation of deeply human memory to a cloud backup?
You don't think a high-res digital file is safer than a rotting piece of paper?
It's just a different kind of fragile, honestly. Suggesting that the digital file is incorruptible ignores the reality of digital fragility. Hard drives fail mechanically, cloud servers corrupt data, file formats become completely obsolete.
Like trying to open an old floppy disk.
Exactly. Just ask anyone trying to retrieve a family photo from a floppy disk today. And more specifically, there is a phenomenon known as bit rot.
Bit rot? What's that?
Over time, the magnetic charges on storage media can slowly lose their polarity. A microscopic one in your image file flips to a zero, and suddenly half your beautiful digital painting is just a corrupted, unreadable gray block.
Oh, wow, that is terrifying.
Right. The digital medium is not immortal. I would argue that what truly saves this memory, what grants it actual permanence, has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it's saved as a JPEG or a PSD file.
Then what saves it?
It is saved because it was passed through the active, laborious filter of human experience. Ruby isn't just a recovered image file. It's a public and private recognition of a 40-year journey.
Yeah.
It's a testament to history, affection, and resilience between two people. Mm. That is what transcends the megapixels. What remains vibrating in that artwork, regardless of the screen you view it on, is the fierce resistance of love against the relentless erosion of time.
I have to admit, that gives the artwork a much heavier existential weight than just calling it a highly successful digital restoration.
It really does.
And I think this brings us to a really beautiful convergence of everything we've unpacked today. These two perspectives, the rigid mathematical technical mastery and the profound subjective emotional intent, they don't cancel each other out.
No, they work together.
Ruby Stands is this extraordinary bridge. It connects a tangible, perishable, analog past with a fluid, digital, pictorial present. Duke didn't use these ultra-modern tools to sterilize the past.
Right.
He didn't just slap a perfect AI smoothing filter over his wife's face to make her look like a generic magazine cover. He used the technology to engage in a deeply respectful, painfully meticulous dialogue with his own history.
He harnessed the cold, exact science of digital lighting and anatomy specifically to preserve the warmth of human connection. It's a perfect synthesis of the two extremes we started with.
Absolutely. So what does this all mean for you listening right now?
It's a great question.
The next time you open up a dusty box of old photos, or even just when you're endlessly scrolling back through your phone's camera roll, trying to preserve a specific memory, ask yourself what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
When you edit that photo, are you objectively trying to recover the exact biological data of what you look like in that precise second? Or are you desperately trying to recover how you felt in that moment and tweaking the image to match the emotion?
It fundamentally changes how you view your own personal archives, doesn't it? You realize you aren't just storing data on a hard drive. You are actively curating your own emotional history. We constantly rewrite our past based on how we feel about it today.
Which leaves us with one final, frankly, somewhat provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, lay it on us.
We've established that human memory isn't a hidden 12th century manuscript waiting to be passively read. It's a canvas that begs to be repainted with the colors and emotions of our present selves.
Right.
But what happens is our digital tools become too perfect, Like we are standing on the very edge of an era where artificial intelligence can flawlessly restore every lost pixel of degraded photograph in half a second with zero human effort.
No digital archaeologist required.
No Apple Pencil, no painstakingly building skin pore by pore, just a single click.
A completely frictionless restoration.
Frictionless. But if that happens, if the machine does it perfectly and instantly, will we lose the beautiful subjective imperfections? Will we lose the very acts of deliberate emotional interpretation, the prudency of knowing when to stop, and the hours of labor driven by deep affection that actually make a memory worth keeping in the first place?
That's a heavy thought.
It's something to think about the next time you look at a fading photo and wish there was a magic button to fix it instantly. Because sometimes the magic isn't in the fixing. The magic is in the dust, the fading edges, and the human effort it takes to remember.